Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everybody. This is Corinne McKay, and on behalf of myself and Yves Baudot, we'd like to welcome you to today's Speaking of Translation conference call. Today we're going to be talking about how to achieve a healthy work and happy work-life balance as a freelancer of any flavor, and particularly as a freelance translator. And by way of introducing the topic a little more, I wanted to say just two caveats before we start, which is that nobody has this all figured out. We're all kind of works in progress when it comes to work-life balance. And also, not all of the ideas that the panelists will have for you are going to be a perfect fit for you. I think our goal is for everyone to get a couple of new good ideas on how to create more balance and, why not, more happiness in your own life. So, Yves, over to you.
So, yeah, I'm Yves Baudot, the co-host with Corinne of Speaking of Translation, and I wanted to welcome everybody to today's call, or this evening's call, or this morning's call, wherever you may be. So,
Yves, you just dropped. I'll just continue Yves' part. We have an all-star team here tonight of freelance translators who we think of as people who have thriving businesses. We figured out during the sound check that we have 11 kids between the panelists, so we're all parents and also involved in non-work activities. But we think that we invited all of these people because we see them as people who manage to stay sane and happy while juggling all of these responsibilities. And our panelists for today, I'm just going to introduce them really briefly and then have them introduce themselves a little more fully. They are Andy Bell, who translates Scandinavian languages into English and lives in Albany, Western Australia; Marianne Reiner, who translates English into French and lives in San Diego, California; and Karen Kochik, who translates French into English and lives in Gardnerville, Nevada. And I think we just got Yves back. Yves, is that you?
That was really ironic because I had called in earlier with Skype, and then I said, "Can you guys hear me?" And then it cut.
Oh, no.
So sorry about that, everybody.
Okay. I just continued with your part. So we're going to have the panelists tell us a little bit about themselves and specifically about work and their work and family situation and maybe some things that are unique to them in terms of the work-life balance. So, Karen, why don't we start with you?
Okay. Hello, everyone. Thanks for having me, Eve and Corinne.
Sure.
Well,
thank you.
I've been married for about 15 years. My husband's also self-employed. He works in IT, largely from home. He has the downstairs office, and I have a large space on the landing. We have three children, a 13-year-old girl and 10 and 11-year-old boys. I work full-time when the children are at school and part-time during most school holidays, school vacations.
Mm-hmm.
Our families are in Europe, and we travel there most years. And I have a lot of clients in Europe, and we live in Pacific time, so I have to work early in the morning so that I can communicate with them. And then sort of our activities and hobbies, you know, the stuff our family gets up to, is lots of, well, martial arts, scouting, Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, various other sports and activities for all five of us, and we're members of a local church. We have fairly heavy volunteer loads. My husband and I try to alternate big volunteer roles. So when my term as president of NITA, which is the Regional Translation Association here in Nevada, ended, my husband went on to our children's school board.
Wow.
So for now, I have smaller T&I roles. I'm an administrator of a division, the Science and Technology Division of ATA, and I'm on one of the ATA's committees too.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. Okay, Marianne, how about you?
Good evening, everyone. So I'm a full-time translator most of the time, like Karen. When my children and my husband are on vacation, I work only part-time. I'm married to my husband, Casey, who's a high school teacher, and we have two children, Lucia, who's 8, and Etienne, who's 5. And I run my business called TransConnect Translation with my business partner, Cindy Hizzleton, who is based in Ohio. So we actually cover the East Coast and West Coast time zone of the U.S., which is very valuable because we have a lot of clients in Europe as well. But like Karen said, I'm also a very early riser, so I do deal with clients in Europe even before they leave the office. Corinne and Eve have asked me to mention some of my outside work interests. I sat down and tried to list them all, and the list was obviously too long. So I narrowed it down to few. I have a side business supporting local entrepreneurs and businesses. I'm also involved in various human rights organizations, one of which I sit on the board of. I support and, you know, participate in many of my kids' sports activity, mainly swimming and running. And last but not least, my family and I love and live to travel. So we travel all around the world as much as we can.
Great. Thank you so much. Okay, Andy, how about you?
Okay. Hi, Corinne. Hi, Eve, and everyone who's listening. My name's Andy Bell. I'm a medical translator based in Albany, a small former whaling town in Western Australia. I'm originally English, as you can probably tell, and we migrated here about 12 years ago. I'm married. My wife, Elizabeth, is a GP obstetrician. We have three kids who are in the other room at the moment, promising to behave. They're 11, 9, and 8. What else? I'm on the marketing committee for the Australian TNI organization. I'm a member of the ATA. I'm a member of the ITI. I run quite a few forums on Facebook, including Water Cooler, Nordic Translators, Medical Translators, and I run at least two cycling forums, and I'm an active racing cyclist. Anything else from me? That's pretty much me in a nutshell, I'd say. And I work pretty close to full-time, and my wife takes up the slack during my busier periods, but I guess we can get into that.
Yeah. Great, thanks. And Eve, I know that probably most of the people who are listening to the call know you from the professional standpoint, but did you want to just tell us a little bit about your kind of work-family situation and what you do when you're not working?
Yes, I'm a French-English translator, and I do a lot of project management, too, outsourcing to other languages. I'm in Westminster, Colorado, which is in the North Denver area. And I've also been married for 16 years, woohoo, and I have two kids who are 11 and 8, so still on the younger side, and I do a lot of school volunteering. We do a lot of music stuff on the side. My kids do dance. We do a lot of outdoor activities like biking, skiing, camping, camping with llamas, as some of you have seen. And I do. We do a lot of church activities too. And also, I was thinking, which you other people probably do as well. Like Karen said, we travel a lot to Europe, and then in the summers, every other summer we go for like 6 weeks, and I have to figure out how to, you know, hang out with all the relatives and friends, and also work from abroad outside my regular office. So.
Great.
And yeah, then, if you solve Corinne, that one, let me know, Eve.
Yeah.
Okay. Then, Corinne, did you want to give us your scoop?
Yeah, sure. And then we'll get into the meat of the conversation. So, like Eve, I live in Colorado. I've been married for going on 14 years, and I have one 11-year-old daughter. In addition to my business, I'm also on the board of the American Translators Association. And I guess one of my challenges is my family loves to play. We moved to Colorado sort of for the quality of the outdoor lifestyle, and so we spend pretty much every weekend biking or hiking or skiing in the Rocky Mountains, and we usually do a bike trip together for about a month every summer. And I guess what's maybe kind of unique to my family is that over the years, my husband has cut back at his job, so he now works 3 days a week and does a lot of the childcare and household management while I'm working. So I always say my secret to a work-life balance is marry someone who has less career ambition than you do, and that gets you off to a good start. So, okay, Eve, over to you, and let's dive on in.
So this is for our panelists, and they'll answer in turn. A lot of freelancers say that they don't feel like they can achieve a good work-life balance, because of the fear factor, so the fear that they'll miss a job offer, that client won't come back to them, the client will stop calling them if they're not available one time, or that they won't earn enough money if they take a day off or take 2 weeks off. So how do you guys deal with those fears and allow yourself to take some time off, to spend time with your family, and to pursue your non-work interests without kind of getting that panic feeling? So we wanted to have Andy go ahead and answer that first.
Okay. Thank you for the question. I think, firstly, that if you have, a lot of us have a fairly large stable of repeat clients who come back to us because hopefully they like the quality of our work, they trust us, find us accessible, friendly, all the things that bring clients back. So 3 or more or less week vacation over the Christmas period is, in my opinion, really unlikely to put any clients off. I think it's important to plan ahead. So before your Christmas holiday, try and wrap up your projects well in advance of your planned vacation so that you haven't got a kind of crossover between your kids' holidays and projects that you're trying to finish. I'm sure we've all done it before, and it's really good to achieve that. Plan ahead for the season, really. Work with your clients and try and tell them ahead of time what your availability is going to be, when you're going to be back at work. And in my experience, clients really appreciate that. I think it's also important to use technology. Use an autoresponder or auto-reply on your email. And catch up with your clients after you've had your vacation break. Just make contact with your clients. If they haven't come back to you, just let them know that you're back at work and ready to get going again. And relax and enjoy your holiday, because we all need to recharge our batteries and become refreshed. So I think your clients are going to come back. I've never really been that concerned that my regular clients wouldn't accept me having a break over a holiday period. So I think it's all good. Plan ahead, inform your clients, use technology, and enjoy your break succinctly. Is that okay?
I think those, yeah. And I was, just as you were talking, I was thinking about, I think, like you said, that's a good point to really plan ahead, and then you're able to relax more, because I think it is really important for all of us to be able to recharge. So thank you, Andy.
Absolutely. No worries.
So, Marianne, did you want to add anything?
Sure. I think also one thing is fear can be a good motivation. I think for me, I have finally come to the acceptance that the downtimes are part of our part of the nature of our work. And during these downtimes, I'm extremely busy. I do things like updating my website, updating my marketing strategies and materials. I spent a lot of time reconnecting reconnecting with clients or connecting with new clients and colleagues. Like Andy just said, I think, sometimes, I mean, the good clients will come back for sure. They have, for me, over the last 8 years, have proven to be very faithful. But they do, like everyone else, they're busy and they need sometimes to be reminded of your presence and you can show some attention. So, for instance, I know that I don't know if I mentioned this before, but I do legal translation mainly. And so when I work on cases that drag on and on and on, long disputes and lawsuits, et cetera, usually if I, after we're done and I don't hear from my clients for a while, I will send them an email and follow up, say, hey, what was the outcome of the case and, what happened and blah, blah, blah. And they actually love that. They said, oh, good, thank you for checking in with us, blah, blah, blah. Another thing I do, and this is the perfect time of year to think about this, is I take the time every year before Christmas to send little gifts and handwritten notes to my clients. And I think this makes a big difference, personally. I know they appreciate it. And then, you can also use the downtimes and your fear motivation or something to improve on your translation skills and also be proactive in making the next project come and find you. Mm-hmm. So that's what I wanted to add.
Thanks.
Oh, good. Yeah, one idea I really like, too, I've noticed now I think it's not as – in the early days when people would send electronic greetings, it's still, it's fine to get electronic greetings now, but I think, like you said, doing handwritten things makes you really stand out,
yes,
as opposed to doing electronic. Mm-hmm. So,
absolutely.
Okay, well,
especially,
Karen,
If I may just add one thing, I do work, obviously a lot of my clients are in France, because I do into French. And on some level, some clients are still very old-fashioned, and they love to receive something that was handwritten or to have a communication handwritten rather than electronically.
Something tangible, yeah. Yeah, that's great.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, Karen, did you want to add anything to the – I'm sure you have wonderful ideas to share with us. So.
Well, actually, when I heard that question, I'm not really afflicted by fear or panic. I think it's just a question of personality type. No, but it's true. I'm not a worrier about in any area of life, and that's perhaps one reason that I like freelancing, because I'm not afflicted by this to the degree that some are. If I end up with no paid projects on a work day, I look at it as a positive and I get on with filing or writing or I spring clean or I weed the garden or what, or I, you know, work out at the gym for a long time to make up for all the days I missed the week before.
So you see it as kind of a bonus.
It's just, like I said, personality type or worldview even that helps me handle that, I suppose. Mm-hmm. And you said something about we might be scared not to earn enough money if we take a day off. So I think a big question is what enough money means. I think we all need to know what enough money is for us, our definition. Would I make more money if I took less time off? Of course I would. I reckon I could probably make 20-25% more than I do from my current client base just based on the volume of work I refuse for them. But you know, my husband and I made a choice to have children, and I have to assign a certain percentage of time to them. I can't just work all the time. I have to, you know, refuse jobs when I already have enough for a given week. So, and I don't have any regrets about that. Of course, the occasional job I wish I could accept, but you know, I don't have regrets that I didn't work for a few years when I had my kids, and I don't have regrets now that I'm not working as much as I could work. Because one day they won't be here and I'll wish I had spent more time with them.
Yeah, that just made me think of a story, actually, when you talked about you make the decision to have kids and sometimes you have to turn down jobs. I got offered a job once to fly to Sweden to work for a client, but they wanted me to fly on the day I was due to give birth. So just the idea that kind of symbolizes that what you're doing, you know, throughout after they're born and then throughout their lives.
Yeah, and clients who want me to be at their beck and call aren't a good fit. Even when I was starting, I didn't have, you know, I had worked for, you know, average, typical agencies, but I still set some boundaries. And the kind of client that requires you to always be available any time of day or night or weekend or holiday, I mean, that's not my client, and I don't have clients who require that. There's one other thing that I thought of that no one said, but I think it's the case. Well, I know it's the case for all of us on this call, and it might be relevant, is that my home has two earners, and I think that removes a lot of the fear factor. I don't have the degree of pressure to earn or achieve that a household with only one earner would have, and I think that simple fact about my life. Is another way that the fear factor goes, and I think it would be very different if I were a single parent.
Okay, that's a good point. Okay. Corinne, I think you had some ideas you wanted to add in about kind of the balancing out the fear factor.
Yeah, and I think I didn't know what Marianne was going to answer, but I wanted to pick up on that about sort of embracing that fear as a powerful motivator. Because I can say for myself, as I talked about in one of our previous calls on freelance sabbaticals abroad, my husband and my daughter are Swiss citizens. And two summers ago, my husband was offered, he has a regular job, but he was offered a consulting job that required us going to Europe for 2 months. So we were in Switzerland for a month and then on vacation for a month. And I think to me, I looked at that and thought, holy cow, I really have to get in gear the 10 months that I am going to be working, because it really made me realize that I had been sort of vegetating with a lot of the same clients for a long time and not doing a lot of outward marketing, looking for the kind of work I wanted and sort of, you know, taking what fell in the inbox rather than seeking out what I wanted to do. And in the end, that year, even though I only worked 10 months, I made more money than I had any other year that I was freelancing. So I do think, in a way, as long as you don't let that fear paralyze you, if the fear sort of forces you to become more strategic, then I think it can be a good thing. I mean, you don't want to be having a panic attack in your office. But I think if you use that to say, you know, what do I need to change in order to, you know, make the situation better, then I think it actually can be a good motivator. And
Did you want to answer that?
Yeah, no, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I really liked Karen's idea, and I think well, most of us on this call probably do her idea of setting boundaries, you know, instinctively, or we've done that on purpose over the years. But I think that's related to what you and Marianne are saying, too, is that, and Andy, too, really, because he's saying he's not at the beck and call of all his clients either. He feels like he needs the time off. You know, we're all saying that I think part of the success of doing the work-life balance is you have to find where your line is, and then you set that boundary and you stick to it.
Exactly. Okay, our next question is about boundaries, but not with your clients, with your spouse or partner or children or pets or neighbors. So I think one thing Eve and I talked about in preparing for this call is that I think a lot of us as freelancers have a really hard time setting boundaries in the sense of being at work when we're working at home, and maybe having a hard time saying no to requests, for example, from your family to run errands, to do household chores, to be there so the guy can come repair the furnace, to volunteer at school because everyone knows you're home during the day. And I'm going to sort of do a spoiler and say my solution to that was that I don't work from home anymore. I finally, after 10 years, treated myself to an office outside the house, and that's probably a separate call, but I highly recommend that if you struggle, as I did, and the issue wasn't the people around me, it was me, but I really struggled with that and finally just cut the cord, and I don't work from home anymore. But Marianne, tell us what you think about that, setting boundaries.
Sure.
Any thoughts?
So first, of course, I had to smile when I saw this question, because I think it is a very critical question for any freelancer. I want to first give a little anecdote. My 8-year-old daughter started a couple weeks ago to put a sign on her door that says "Danger Zone, Lucia's Laboratory," and you know, who knows what she was doing in there. And last week I had to finish a really, really big project, and I was, you know, very busy. And one day I put on my door, as I knew that my husband and my kids were coming home and I wasn't quite done yet, I said, "Danger Zone, do not disturb Mama."
Oh, wow.
And the kids knew that I was very serious if I had put that sign on my door. I don't often have to resort to this. Luckily, my house is set that my office is in the very back of the house, away from the main living area. So that's, you know, pretty lucky for that. And the first thing I do, my husband always teases me because I'm a list person, I'm a schedule person, I'm very, very organized. And so every Sunday I will give my husband and my kids my schedule for the week ahead. And I will tell them if there are any holes in my schedule, and I will tell them if you need me for something during these few holes, if there are any, this is when I can help and not any other time. So they know this by Sunday night. Then another little trick I have to set boundaries within my house or the outside world is I make a point to dress professionally every day when I drop my kids off to school. So my kids see that I'm working. Their teachers, the other parents, and any other people around see that I'm working. And even though I haven't done, I haven't jumped to an outside office like Hugh Corain yet, I still feel like I'm going back to my office dressed professionally, not in my sweatpants, after I drop my kids off. And another thing is, of course, the request from friends, family members, you know, other parents at school or whatever to interrupt your days are inevitable. It happens. So my answer is always the same. I have actually two favorite ones. I say, well, let me check my schedule. I will be done working on such and such day around that time, and after which I could be available to you. Or sometimes I say, you know, my boss has not agreed to give me the time off.
Oh, my gosh, I love that.
And people are like, oh, you have a boss? I said, yeah, it's me, and she's mean. So I think over the years I have learned to be really firm and to say no and to sometimes disappoint. But I think this was, for me, the only way to set boundaries. During the summer, I do something a little similar to Corrine because my husband's a teacher and my kids are off also. And so it is a little harder for me in the summer to work with high concentration in my house. So I will work sometimes from the public library, or I will pay by the month a shared office space in downtown San Diego.
So. Cool. Wow, I'm learning so much just from listening to you guys. This is great. Okay, Karen, let's move on to you. Boundaries, what do you have for us?
Boundaries, yeah, well, I have some. In the early morning, I work, and the family expects that. So the children get themselves up and ready for school, make their breakfasts, make their lunches without prompting. We're all morning people, thankfully, even the teenager. So that works.
Great,
still.
Yeah.
I try to get away from email and join them for breakfast, but often they do it alone, and I just leave my desk to actually drive them to school.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no boundary
sorry
in
the
morning. To like, yeah.
So Karen, is that mainly because I was thinking I have that issue with the – it's because you have a lot of European clients. Is that why?
Right, and I'm in Pacific time, so if I work from 6 to 8 in the morning, for instance, that's a really important communication negotiation window. If I don't get back, quite often I take them to school, and then if I'm going to work out, I might work out, so then I'm not really back at my desk for an hour or an hour and a half. So that early portion is important. But you know what, it's also because I'm a morning person and I've always got up early, but that's how it's evolved. For the mornings. Then during the typical working day, my husband and I are both at home, and we just get on with work, and we don't interrupt each other very often because this lifestyle only works because we're basically both self-motivated and disciplined and work, you know, most of the time. And sometimes we plan to take, you know, to go out for lunch together or something. But basically, we both work hard while the children are at school. And then when the children are at home, I'm usually available to them. That's the default. Like I told you, my office is on the landing, so it's an open space. So it's not like, you know, it's surrounded by four bedrooms and a bathroom. There's, you know, it's just a big open space, so it's not like I'm closed off.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if I'm behind or under a particularly heavy deadline, I tell them so, and they know that, okay, and I'll try and do my homework on my own or whatever the case may be, or my husband might do the taxiing. They're all old enough to understand if either of their parents is under a deadline now. When I first started, it was completely different. They were 1, 3, and 5, and that made for late nights and relying on my husband to help when I had a big job on, or if a promising new client came in and I really wanted to take something when it was really inconvenient. So that was a constant juggling extravaganza, you know, nightmare for a couple of years. But then they're all at school, and I don't have any more time. I just have solid blocks of time. I don't have any more time now because of all their activities. I just have a solid, you know, school hour block when they're all out, and then there's the time when they want me to taxi. And we have one other boundary in our house. We don't work on Sundays, so a Monday morning deadline for me means a Saturday evening deadline, you know, as a firm rule. And in practical terms, it usually means 3 o'clock on Friday, so that I rarely do anything but handle email over the weekend. So my husband does that too. And it's so easy for work to take over when we both work at home. I mean, even when one of you works at home, it's very easy. But when both of us work at home, it's very easy. So this is one way that we prevent work taking over. It gives our families weekly structure, some predictability. And we have a rest, of course, whether you're taking a day off for, you know, traditional, for religious reasons or just because you know you need a rest and some fun. I think a rest and some fun is important. So that's one firm boundary we have as well.
And
can I cover a question?
Yeah, can I? I'm going to put you on the spot with a little impromptu question here, Karen. And can you give us a little bit of the maybe the plus minus of having a spouse who also works at home?
Well, the plus is the taxiing for children.
Mm-hmm.
Because when he's, you know how sometimes you just need a break, you're just ready to take a break, and a 20-minute drop-off or pick-up just seems like a good break.
Yes.
And there are other times when that 20-minute drop-off or pick-up just feels like it's really going to ruin your, you know,
derail
afternoon
the whole day
or whatever. Right. It's just at exactly the wrong moment. So he's there too, and sometimes he can take the, he can share the load.
Mm-hmm.
So that's very much a plus. The minus is what I covered already, I think, the fact that it just means there are even fewer boundaries because he works at home too.
Right.
And he's not, when the children get home from school, he's still working. He's not available when they get home from school. I'm the one who's in theory available when they get home from school.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, does that answer that?
Karen, I have a question too, or for anybody. Do you guys, because my situation is my children don't go to the neighborhood school, so I'm part of the driving around is I have to go get them at their schools, and so I'm just curious of how other people, if your kids go to your neighborhood school and they walk, or you have to pick, that's part of the process is that you also pick them up.
I have to drive quite a long way, actually.
Right.
It's 20 minutes each way.
Marianne was saying you have a long way. You drive too?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Every morning.
I drive too because mine are
not
up. Sorry.
Go ahead, Karen. Sorry. No, go ahead.
Okay. Mine are at private school, so there's no school bus, and it's a 12-minute drive each way.
Okay.
So, yeah, I mean, we carpool. We always do mornings. We don't always do afternoons. But, yeah, same scenario as Marianne and you by the sound of it.
Mm-hmm. And my daughter walks to school, so I'm out of that one, too.
I know, Corinne's lucky. Now, what about Andy? I'm just curious about your situation in Australia. And how does that
Andy,
work?
Let's move on.
Terms of the kids, I've been a home parent for all three of our kids since they were very little. My wife's an obstetrician, so she has an extensive kind of an unpredictable on-call situation. So at 3 in the morning, we can get a call, and she's off to the hospital, and she can have one at tea time. It's really difficult to gauge. So on the plus side, it means that she has a good income. So as Karen mentioned before, I think in terms of the fear factor, I do have that buffer because we have my wife with a sort of consistent and good income. But my income is also, it's not pin money. It's an important part of our household income, you know. In terms of boundaries, I have to act as the buffer because of the nature of her on-call work. I often try and take up slack and keep the kids sort of away from her when she's got her on-call periods, if you know what I mean. And I think over time I've got quite good at that. But I get up very early. I like you, Corinne, I'm a cyclist, so I get up quite a few times a week. I get up at 4:30 in the morning.
Wow.
And I've done sort of 40, 50 Ks by 6:30.
Oh, my gosh.
I don't did it this morning, but on days that I don't cycle, I usually set my alarm about an hour before the kids get up. So I'll get up at 6 o'clock, have a coffee, and just sit quietly. And like a lot of you guys, I'll look at emails, and I'll make a list of things that I think are important. I'll try and prioritize tasks for the day or for the week. I'm quite fortunate I have my own study. My wife isn't allowed in here because she'll start to count how many bikes I have. and that's always risky. So I try and sort of get her out very quickly if she comes into here. We also have quite a few pets, so I have to walk the dogs in the morning. We've got a fairly young cat with a kitten, and they try and sit on my keyboard a lot of the time, so I have to shove the pets out of the room as well. But what I try and do is I have two set days during the week where I try and do the food shopping. I avoid doing shopping on the days in between that. I have a fairly good system for figuring out what I need to cook for the kids. I do the house cleaning myself because I haven't found a decent cleaner. As you guys probably know, they're pretty hard to find and to keep. But again, if I have, during a working day, I'll often shut the rest of the house off from my office, and I'll really try and avoid going in there unless I absolutely have to. I use an app for the iPhone called NAG, N-A-G, and I set that to work for 90-minute periods. So once I've walked the dogs, dropped the kids off, made sure the house is reasonably tidy and that the kids have sorted their bedrooms out before school, I'll shut the rest of the house off and then start working in 90-minute segments with 15, 20-minute breaks in between. Then I pick the kids up around 3 o'clock. And again, like most of you guys, I'll devote that time from sort of 3 o'clock until around 6 or 7 to the kids because their childhood is primary to me, you know, and it's a fleeting moment. So I'm very aware, which I perhaps wasn't in the early days, that that really is the key thing, and you can't get that back once it's gone. So mm-hmm. So I don't take on the extremely tight deadlines. And again, as Karen mentioned, you can be selective about the client base that you want to keep. If you've got clients who persistently give you very tight deadlines, third generation fax copy with lots of tables, then you probably want to disengage from them. But the clients who do recognize your home situation, and a lot of project managers, you know, are parents themselves, and quite a few of them I find get it, you know. If you're clear with them from the outset and say that you have a young family, that you don't do super tight deadlines, but at the same time playing up the positives that you can take longer deadlines and without going into the details, playing up the positive aspects of your work. And I found that's worked pretty well for me, to be honest. You know, I've got a regular bunch of clients who know my work situation. They don't tend to give me sort of shock deadlines or expect me to do the unachievable. And that works pretty well. Coffee shops, I do go to a coffee shop a couple of times a week. I did think about the shared office space, but my home setup, I have three, probably like a lot of us, I have three monitors. I have a pretty tight setup really at home, and it feels comfortable to me. You know, I have a desk that I actually stand up and work at for most of the morning. And I can't easily replicate that in a coffee shop or a shared working space. So I think if you set your own boundaries, be disciplined about what you do, treat the rest of your domestic situation as if it wasn't there unless you really have to, and then come back to it at the point that you need to. And I also try and, again, as Karen said, I do, if I have a big project, I tell my kids, I tell them to leave me alone as much as possible, but I do tell them that I will be back with them at a given point so that they're not in the dark. They understand that there's an end point to my work. And I do try not to cross over too much with work, but I am a little bit of a workaholic, and I do tend to sit on the couch with my second laptop. How's that?
Great.
Any questions?
Thank you. So Andy, I have an impromptu question for you too. Being the only guy on our panel, can you give us a little bit of maybe the dad perspective, or maybe how it feels different to you as a guy being in this role versus to us as women? Because, for example, I always feel like in the U.S. at least, you know, my husband and I split the child and home responsibilities pretty equally, and even that is pretty unusual, I think. And so maybe for you as the kind of primary parent and household person is even less the norm. And I don't know, do you have any insights on that or tips for other guys who might be interested in following in your footsteps?
Well, look, I was a registered nurse for about 17 years, so I've always worked with women for a start, so I kind of know that. I've worked in that situation, so I tend to work very well with females, and maybe I'm in touch with my feminine side, I don't know.
Right.
But I do tend to be a little bit of a control freak, I guess, in terms of the house, because I've run a fairly, I guess men and women bring different things to the table in terms of parenting, and I'm sure we have different styles when we home parent. I found it's helped me to be very predictable in terms of, even though the nature of our work as freelance workers is unpredictable, I try and be predictable about certain things with the children so they know that I will take them to school, I will pick them up, that we'll organise activities for the weekend so that I don't sit in front of my laptop and the weekend I try and keep purely for the kids, you know.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of being a man, I guess in many ways my wife, and she would admit it, feels a little bit sort of peripheral in many ways because I've taken over so many roles at home. So I have to kind of almost let her back in when she comes home. So she has a day off. She herself has admitted that she finds it difficult to organize the children and to sort of figure out how to work out boundaries, whereas I'm extremely black and white. I can take the kids around the supermarket and they won't ask me for stuff because they know I won't do it.
Good man.
I've always felt very comfortable with the role of home parent. It didn't feel unusual to me as a guy. Again, probably because I looked after the children from when they were little babies, you know, so most of the nappies I changed. I spent the very early days in the parks on my own with the kids, so they know me very well, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But the freelance, I've worked for hospitals for a large part of my working life, and I really like, despite the occasional downsides, I really like the freelance lifestyle. I like the unpredictable nature of it. I like the fact that there are surprises around the corner. You really don't know what project you're going to get in the coming weeks. You know, I find it challenging, but it's also immensely rewarding.
Awesome. Yeah. Thanks for letting me put you on the spot with that. That was a really interesting
answer. Okay.
Okay, and then we have one last question for everybody, and we promised our panelists that we would wrap up in under an hour, so I'm going to turn it over to Eve for the closing question.
Yeah, and actually before I ask it, I just thought one of the things that Andy said, I wanted to pull that out too again and emphasize that. I thought it was real interesting that all of us are very flexible, and all of us who are on the call, it seems like in our family situation, as everyone described, we're the more kind of flexible party in our partnership with our spouse or partner. And we don't, like Andy said, we don't just make pin money, but I was thinking, just to emphasize, you know, we're all like, we all have dedicated office space, we all have established client lists, and we all make significant contribution to our family, even though we're the more flexible one. It doesn't mean we're kind of the mom doing translation on the side or whatever.
Right.
So that was,
right.
That was interesting that you pointed that out.
Yeah.
So, okay, so our last question, we wanted to give the panelists an opportunity to offer people kind of their own tips for a better work-life balance, kind of an open-ended question, and allow you guys to do that. So what tips do you have, kind of your killer tip or your favorite tip that you want to offer people to have a better work-life balance? And then the second part of this section would be that if you want to go ahead and talk to us about some of your own goals for yourself in 2014 in terms of work-life balance. So we're going to continue on with Andy, who was talking just previously, but go ahead, Andy, and if you want to answer those two questions.
Okay, so work-life balance. I'm a super keen cyclist. I cycle 5 or 6 times a week. I won the Veterans Championship for my local bike club this year. I'm passionate about it. And that's a huge stress reliever for me because, A, it keeps me fit. I get all my exercise done very early in the morning. So even when I come home, my kids are just getting up and I've done my exercise for the day. So it doesn't hang over me like the sword of Damocles. You know, I can kind of tick that box, and I know that even if our job can be relatively sedentary, that I've taken care of my health, and I have a social time. I mix, as a man, this is, for me, it's pretty important, I mix with a bunch of guys. We don't talk about anything lofty or translation related, really. It's just me sharing company with other people. And as someone who works for large periods alone, as we all do, I think that's really important. So I feel quite socially connected with the guys I work with locally. What was my super tip? I guess if I had a tip, it was in terms of holiday periods, try and sort your office out before the holiday period. So don't let it become a storeroom for the Christmas presents. And in the past, I used to let paperwork pile up over the holidays, and I'd come back. When the kids went back to school after Christmas, I'd have to spend at least 2 or 3 days getting my office sorted. So prior to Christmas, I try and make a point of making the office presentable, organized.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I do come back to work, I feel I can focus on the challenges and make a business plan. That's a really good point for me after the Christmas holidays. Lay down a business plan for some achievable goals that you can actually start to work towards, be that your LinkedIn profile, taking a look at your CV, your website, how you're going to market yourself, recontacting clients, all that sort of stuff. So if you get your home space sorted, lay out a business plan, and then you're good to go when you come back after Christmas. That's it.
Okay.
Awesome.
Thanks. So, Marianne, did you want to give us your killer tip and also talk to us a little bit about your goals for 2014?
Sure. I don't know about killer tips, but one thing, and I think it's pretty apparent in our whole conversation, is if you have a life partner, have one who understands and supports what you do. I could not do what I do without, you know, my husband. That's a given. Also, another thing, surround yourself, whether virtually or literally, with people who are in a similar work situation, not necessarily freelance translators, but other freelancers. And I think for me, it gives me an opportunity to share some ideas, some successes, some frustrations. I think it's an important part of, you know, the work balance life that I hope I have and is happy. And have some personal interests that are not connected to what you translate. Like I said, most of my work is legal translation. This is not exactly exciting usually. And I love to have interests that are not connected at all to what I do. And finally, have a sense of humor and have a dose of laughing every day, because I think it just makes life much, you know, much better. And my goals, I'm writing them early, thanks to you guys. Thank you. I would like to spend more time writing this year, personal writing projects. I would like to, on a, you know, professional level, to get at least 2 more steady direct clients, and then which will bring, I think, you know, to a number that I will feel comfortable with saying, okay, I have mainly direct clients. And then on another personal level, I would like to improve my running skills. And my children are helping me with this.
Awesome.
Well, that's it.
Great. Okay. And then, Karen, we want to hear your kind of special tip that you want to share with everyone, and then a little bit on your goals for 2014.
Well, my tip is we all talk about using automatic out-of-office responders, but I think it's important what you put in it. I routinely put, I have no availability or I'm not available until such and such a date, because that means they know I can't do it and I'm not tempted to take it, you know, because
right.
You all
that's
know
really
what
interesting.
I mean.
Yeah, yeah,
right?
Yeah.
If I put that I am not available in the out-of-office response, then I'm not tempted. I know I've already told them no, however good it was. Now, obviously, if you have a lot of direct clients and not so many agencies, then that becomes harder because you can't do that so easily with direct clients. But I've always had a private conversation with direct clients before anyway, you know, so this kind of message is really important for agency clients in particular. So saying that I'm not available, because that way I'm not tempted to reply and change my mind and squeeze it in and think I'll just squeeze it in on the way, on the flight somewhere or something else where my productivity is going to be absolutely dreadful and I'm going to have no peace to proofread. Another tip would be to set some routine time boundaries. Whether it's like me, it's to do with not working on Sunday, but for you it might be I'll never work on a Friday evening. You know, the family always knows I'm free on a Friday evening, or I will not check my phone when we go out for lunch, or I'll always be at the gym from, you know, whatever it is, 5 to 6 p.m. It doesn't matter what it is, but I think every little defined boundary helps, because it shows that you're making that other thing a priority as well as your work. And I think that that is part of the secret to finding some balance.
I think that relates to just what Andy has said, what we've all said too. I think because we all do have, on this call anyway, all of us do have children, I think that also sets up a good model for them because we want them to see us working hard, but we want them to see us separating things out.
Yeah, that's a good point. And the second part was, so goals for 2014. Well, I had one already that came from something Corinne said at the ATA conference in November. It was about time management. So, Corinne, you talked about measuring tracking time. So that's something I only do for...
Oh, Karen, I think you just dropped.
No, Karen, I think she might still be there, but...
Okay. Karen, if you can hear us, we can't hear you. Yeah, I don't see her on the dashboard. I think her call might have dropped.
Okay.
It's okay.
Okay. That was interesting. That was interesting, though. Corinne, do you want to fill that in any about what you talked about tracking time, because so the people can kind of get that idea?
Yeah. So David Rumsey and I did a presentation together at the ATA at the recent ATA conference and talked about using time tracking software. The one we recommended was Toggle, but you can use all sorts of time tracking apps to figure out exactly where your time is going. So, for example, figure out how much time in a day you spend reading and responding to email, how much time you spend on non-work websites, and especially, I think we've got Karen back here. Hang on a sec. Karen, is that you?
Hello. I have no idea what happened.
Oh, that's okay. Please continue. Time tracking.
Where was I? Right, time tracking. So I usually track time for everything where I'm paid by the hour, as we all do, but I've never tracked every minute of every day. That's really hard for me because I naturally juggle. You know, when email comes in, I handle it. I respond very quickly and move it out my inbox. I have a clear inbox at the end of most working days. So the idea of tracking, you know, what I do for each client or each area of life is intimidating, but I'm committed to doing it for a full week. I reckon if I only do it for a day or two, I can manipulate my habits quite quite well to fake some results, but I don't think I can keep that up for a whole week. By the end of a week, I'll know how much time I waste on social media or, you know, how long I spend doing laundry during the working day. So that's one of my goals, to monitor, so that I know where all my time goes for a while.
So when we do our 2015 call, we're going to check back in and see how you did.
Yeah, all right. And I do have a personal goal, too. I'm a goal-oriented person. I'm always dashing from one thing to the next, you know, in the way that people who have busy lives do or are. So one of my goals for next year is to commit to spending some time socially with some female friends. I never just go out for coffee, ever. Just doesn't happen. So I'm going to try and do that a little more next year.
Awesome.
Maybe we should, Karen, that was one of my goals too, so maybe we should like meet in Las Vegas or something. No?
Yeah.
We can pick somewhere nicer than that, but all right.
Yeah.
Okay, so to really wrap up, Eve, I know that you had a couple of additional resources that you wanted to mention for the audience. Was it a book and a YouTube video?
Yeah, so we'll go ahead and we'll put those on the website, and that kind of relates back to what Mary Ann said that I wanted to emphasize that too, was that I think it's important for us to be in different professional groups outside, in our own industry, but also outside our industry. So I belong to a couple professional groups too where we exchange ideas kind of on the, you know, professional women's groups, and the other one is males and females, and they don't have anything to do with translation, so I feel like I get rejuvenated with new ideas and things like that. And in one of the groups, they recommended a book called The Orange Line, and it's more focused with mothers who are working, but I think it also could be for men who you know, are balancing that too, who are freelancers and that kind of thing. And then there's a YouTube video that I'll also post that's kind of related to the same idea. So
great, thank you. Okay, so I think we're going to wrap it up there. Thank you, everyone, for joining us, especially a huge thanks to Andy, Karen, and Marianne for taking the time out of your schedules, especially at a busy holiday time of year, to talk to our listeners today. And as with all of our other calls, we'll be posting this recording as a podcast on our website, speakingoftranslation.com. You can go there and see our listen page for podcast archives of all of our past conference calls as well.
So, yeah, I just wanted to thank everybody for joining us and to our panelists as well. And for anybody out there, if you have any feedback you'd like to share, we like to get emails or from comments from our listeners or for future calls, just email us. And the address is speakingoftranslation@gmail.com. Thanks, everybody.
Yeah,
thank you.
Actually, I should mention, too, I think this was our largest live audience call ever, and we got some really nice tweets during the call, too, so thank you so much, and obviously it's a very timely and needed topic, so thank you so much to our panelists, and everyone else have a wonderful day.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.